Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm airing an interview I did with dancer, choreographer, director of Broadway musicals, Jeff Calhoun. Listen to the interesting story of how Jeff went from a boy fascinated by dance, especially tap dance, to a director of Broadway musicals. So hang on. Here come the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can.
Hello, and welcome to The Lynn Show. The Lynn Show is about being who you really are so you can live the life you were meant to live. As a psychotherapist, I see over and over again people who are not living the life they were really meant to live because they don't even know all of who they really are. Unfortunately, so many of us were forced to hide, bury, pretend that certain qualities, aspects, abilities, talents, interests that we had naturally were unacceptable, would bring a response that we didn't want. Anything from simply being ignored or neglected up through being shamed and even being punished or traumatized. These events that discourage us from being who we really are can occur in our family of origin, they can occur amongst our peers, they can occur in school, unfortunately too often, with our religion or our culture. These institutions, these situations can tell us that something about us is wrong, bad, unattractive. And flexible as children are, we begin very quickly to pretend that whatever it is not so, that we don't have that quality, we can't do that thing, we don't have that thought, We don't have that behavior. And over time, we get so good at pretending that we actually forget that we have it. We bury those things about ourselves. I say we bury them undercover. Because for me, the qualities that we then present, which are the truth, but not the whole truth, are our cover story. And just like a spy who keeps their cover story in place, because to not to do that would be dangerous, that's how we feel. If I were to demonstrate this quality, this thought process, this way of being, this ability, this talent, something bad would happen. So I'll just keep it locked up under cover. I won't even know I have it. I talk about this in all my shows, why it happens and what you can do about it. I write about it in my book. The book is called When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It. You can find that book on my website, where you can also find anything that you want to know about me. I am currently practicing psychotherapy entirely on the telephone. So any place that you live, you can reach me. And I wrote an article about therapy on the phone called Psychotherapy on the Go. You can get that on the website as well. The other thing you can get on the website is all of the podcasts of my previous shows and the 260-something interviews that I've done. The interviews are all of people who make their living or their life with an art. I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because when you listen to them, you know what it sounds like to be who you really are and to be living the life you were meant to live. And it is my hope that by listening, you will be inspired to ask yourself, is there a quality I suspect that I have, but I've been afraid to try? Is there something I always wanted to do, but have never risked? Is there something hiding that my life would be enhanced by uncovering? I interview people who make their living or their life with an art because we make it so difficult for people to make a life, never mind a living, with an art in this culture. And so those people who do it, they're the ones who are demonstrating who they really are. They can't actually help it. And as I said, when you listen to them, you can hear what it sounds like. So today, I'm airing an interview I did with dancer, choreographer, director of Broadway musicals, Jeff Calhoun. I did this interview with Jeff after he had brought the musical, Bonnie and Clyde, the musical, to workshop at the Oslo Repertory Theater Company in Sarasota, Florida. And in this interview, you will hear him talking about how that occurred. You will hear him talk about his next, the project that was next, which was Newsies, for which he and the star Jeremy Jordan and the set and costume designer Tobin Ost were all up for Tony Awards. And you will hear him talk about his plans for the future to direct Pulse by Noah Racey. He will talk about Noah. And if you were listening last week, you heard my interview with Noah Racey. And if you listen to Noah, you know what it sounds like to be who you really are. Noah discovered himself in a drum at the age of 3 and never looked back. And Jeff discovered the dancer in him on TV when he was around 8, and he never looked back. If you're anywhere near Sarasota, Florida, or if you can get here, you want to come and see Jeff Calhoun's direction of Noah Racey's Pulse. It's wonderful. It's joyous. It makes you glad to be alive. I am going to play Sharon Leslie's review of Pulse, which will confirm what I have said. And then I'm going to play my interview with the delightful, charming, self-deprecating, adorable, funny, talented Jeff Calhoun. So up next is Sharon Leslie's review, and following that is my interview with Jeff. Wow! Double wow! Triple wow! Noah Racey's Pulse at at the Oslo Repertory Theatre is a bombshell of a musical work. Contemporary yet traditional, flashy yet minimalist, its appeal relies solely on the talents of the performers and not technological hocus pocus. I gotta say, what a welcome and celebratory change of pace in our overblown world of comic book or wizardry heroes on screen and on the stage. Here are real people who have spent years of practice and passionate drive to become accomplished virtuosos in their art, just doing and sharing their thrilling art with joy. I was beginning to think that personality and human bravura were going to be totally overshadowed by computer gimmickry. Essentially, Pulse is a review, a pastiche of mostly familiar tunes by Cole Porter, Irving Berlin, George M. Cohan, with more contemporary songs like Rich Girl by Hall & Oates and You Can Love Yourself by Keb Moe, and some rap. Oh, did I say there was tap dancing? Is there ever tap dancing? Pulse is a fireworks display of tap dancing with nods to Fred Astaire, Gene Kelly, with and without Leslie Caron, the Nicholas Brothers, and Gregory Hines. The night is a celebration of rhythms danced by the feet, as is referenced right off with the second song, quote, "Educate Your Feet," unquote. Then, celebrated in various ways with the band. Even the performers play on a variety of homegrown implements, like spoons and the washboard, or show off sounds made by the mouth, and even the body gets played, as percussionist Jason Udoff does so entertainingly. The great star of the night is the charming Noah Racey. He is an unabashed song and dance man who reminds me of a contemporary Fred Astaire, only handsomer. But then again, he could be more in the style of Gene Kelly, since he never wears a tux. He sings with a charming simplicity that allows the song and the sentiment of the lyric to shine, that is a most welcome contrast to the overwhelmingly Baroque styling of Christina Aguilera and her like. His grace, virtuosity, and imaginative use of choreography. Oh yeah, he also wrote and choreographed the piece. Because he is such a great performer, he could utilize the various strengths of his own dancing and that of his fellow performers to show stopping excellence. Obviously, this is a rave, but with good reason. Besides the amazing execution of the various virtuoso dance passages, Racey imaginatively employed change-up rhythms, looks, use of floor space, theatrical stunts, and even taking his tap shoes off and having them dropped in from overhead. All the performers were of the highest caliber, and each had featured moments. Frances Bradley sang and danced a beautiful rendition of I Got You Under My Skin. Laura Lynn McClelland sang a haunting Eat and danced a lyric duo with Racey in another number. Christopher Irk, Danny Gardner, and Antonio Russo all had moments of individual dance spectacularisms. I think that's a new word. And when they danced as a unit, they were all sharp, crisp, and on the money, quite literally at one time. The look of the show is minimalist. The direction of the piece by Jeff Calhoun is theatrical and yet intimate. The seven-piece band plays on stage behind a well-worn wooden dance floor. The backdrop is a polka-dot wall of lights that vary in color throughout the performance. The wall of lights is echoed by two traveling panels of girds of lights, while the floor is surrounded by floor lights. It's an old, but at the same time, a modern look. No high-tech revolving, quote, American Idol, unquote, lights here. These guys are pros, not wannabes. The casual costumes are flashy, yet understated with jeans, suits, colorful t-shirts, clothes you might see on the street. There is nothing better in the world than to see great performances by inspired artists. I hope you make the time to see Noah Racey's Pulse at the Oslo Conservatory Theater. If not, you'll have to pay a fortune to see it on Broadway. It deserves to be there and all over the world. I am here with Jeff Calhoun in his amazing apartment, which he just renovated and is a set for the dynamic Jeff Calhoun. So I haven't explained to him. I interview people who make their living or their life within art. Does that describe you, do you think?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I never thought I could do it, but yes, it does describe me.
Yeah. It's clear. So, okay, so I always ask the same question. And that is, how did it happen? How did it get started? What was the very beginning, the first inkling that the art, which, and come to think of it, is the art theater? Is the art dance? Is the art directing? What is the art that you would say you mostly give your life to?
For me, well, it's a different thing. The inkling was being a kid and watching the Carol Burnett Show, and the Ernie Flatt dancers would be on every week. And I would say to my...
How old were you?
Oh, wow. You know, 9? Mm-hmm. 8, 9. Right. And I would say to my parents, I want to do that. How can I do what they do? Mm-hmm. And my mom said, well, you can go to, you know, dance class. My father was like, you don't want to go to dance class.
Oh, really?
I said, well, I want to do what they do. I want to be an Ernie Flatt dancer. So that was really the spark, was that.
Okay, now, wait. So it was okay with your mother? She didn't have any Boys Don't Dance?
Not at all.
But your father had a little Boys Don't Dance?
Yeah, I think initially.
Yeah.
Yeah, initially.
The sort of knee-jerk...
I don't think you encourage it.
Right.
You know,
right.
My parents have always supported me, but I don't think...
That was his first choice. He didn't say, gee, what I want is a dancer.
That's right. When he knew it was a passion, he supported it 100%.
Good for him.
But just my flip answer of I wanted to dance like that, I'm sure he wanted to be sure it was a real, you know, passion.
But that's a very sweet thing to say.
Yeah.
You know, that's a very sweet thing to say about a parent. A lot of parents wouldn't have been able to do that.
No, my parents have been supportive of everything that I've ever done.
This
business, it's so hard making a living as an artist that, and I have a lot of friends and artists fortunate as I with their a good family background, mm-hmm. that I don't know how I would do it without that support.
No,
it's
I think
just
it's really
so difficult. It helps.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true, and I'd like to talk more about that. Yeah. But so you're watching this, and your mother says, so do you take dance lessons? Is that what happens?
That's exactly right. So she looked up and found a dance studio, and she started taking me to dance class. And, but also watching, you know, Dick Van Dyke mm-hmm. on television.
Whose every move is a dance.
Yeah, he, you know, at the start of da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da- same practical every single day. I come home from school Monday through Friday, and I would do it just with Dick Van Dyke. I wanted to be Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah.
I wanted to be the Ernie Flatt dancers. I wanted to be, of course, Fred Astaire.
Right.
So Ken Barry. Oh. Do you remember Ken Barry? He was the star of F Troop.
Oh yes.
But he used to also be a guest star on the Carol Burnett Show all the time, and he was a great tap dancer and a Broadway song and dance man.
Wow.
And then Arthur Duncan on it was called the Lawrence Welk Show.
Oh yes.
And he was the tap dancer. And no matter what I was doing, my parents would yell out on Sundays if I was out in the yard playing and said, "Come on in, Mr. Duncan's on TV," and I'd run in and I'd watch, I wanted to be Arthur Duncan. So that was the spark for me, watching people on TV.
But it was clear to you.
Yeah.
The minute you saw it, you said, "That's mine. You know, I
want
to do that," right?
Yeah.
Wow.
No doubt about that.
That's really interesting to me. I mean, lots of kids might have said, "Gee, that's interesting." I mean, I did. I thought, "Gee, it would be lovely to move like that." And it's not the same as what happened to you.
It's in your blood.
Yes, right. It was.
Yeah, it's in your DNA.
I think that's right.
Absolutely.
I think that's exactly right. Okay, so we have you at 9 or 10 or whatever dancing,
that's right.
And so then what?
Boy, and then the next step, I guess, was to be in community theater. So
when?
I did children's theater. 11, 12. You know, I was. Brer Rabbit.
So how did that happen? I mean, did you say, "Gee, they have this play"? Did somebody, did your mom, did somebody, did the teacher?
Good question. No, I think it's just we had a very famous community theater called the North Star Players. And they had a children's theater. So my mom brought me to audition for that. And I did, for as long as I can remember, Mr. Popper's Penguins. I was in Brer Rabbit, Heidi. Yeah,
everything.
And
is this because you were already a good dancer, or because you...
It was, yes. I certainly was not a great singer, as Mrs. Rhodes always reminded me. She was the musical director.
She said, "You're not a great singer?"
Yeah, that's exactly what she said, actually, yeah.
Really?
There was a song in Heidi where I was supposed to go, "Hear the mountains calling you, Heidi, Heidi," but I couldn't go, "Calling you, it's too high for me." So she made me go, "Hear the mountains calling you, Heidi, Heidi." But anyway, so I was at all those shows. And yeah, I was a tap dancer at that point. I'd been studying for years. And, you know, boys, at that age, I think it's hard to get boys interested in being in shows. So when anyone wants to, I think they just take you.
Right.
They're tickled to death. Whether you're talented or not. Right, right. Yeah. And so...
But you were.
I just did the community theater, the children's theater. Then I jumped up from the children's theater to the adult community theater. And mind you, in school, I would do all the musicals in school. Mm-hmm. Even when I was in junior high, I was in the high school musicals.
Okay, so now you're acting, too, are you not?
Well, it depends who you ask.
Well, you know what, I had a role.
Right. I look back, and I was just a terrible actor.
But you must have been a great dancer.
I was a good dancer, but I was so enthusiastic about it.
You loved
audience
it.
Audience always talked about, yes, how excited I seemed to be there.
Yeah.
And that's what got me through. You know, I had a good sense of humor, and I was a good tap dancer. But other than that, I just enjoyed being there. Mm-hmm. But it was clear to me that, you know, directing was really the direction I wanted to go.
When did you discover that?
Well, in high school, I don't know how this happened, but I got the school board to give me English credit if I did an all-student production of Godspell. So there were no adults involved, and that was my English credit my senior year. And it was, I directed it and choreographed it, and...
So you haven't, nobody has shown you how to do this, you haven't studied it, you've had so much experience.
Actually, that was my senior year.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to my senior year, 2 years before my senior year, when I was 16 years old, I got a job dancing with Ann Miller in Anything Goes at the Kenley Players.
Wow.
My dance teacher was choreographer for the Kenley Players. The Kenley Players is a great summer stock circuit in Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
So I was 16 and in professional theater. That's when I got my equity card. So I was watching pros direct and pros choreograph, so I was really learning a lot.
Right.
So then when I went back to school, I was eager to put that to use
and
direct my own show. And yeah.
So you were directing by the time you were a high school senior.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, really.
It is amazing.
I was very lucky. I have a very blessed sort of life.
Yeah. And I hear this. Not uncommonly, it just fell into place for me. I mean, I don't know, it just, you know, the things were there and I was there and...
I mean, it's hard work.
That does not diminish
but
the... Right.
Absolutely. It's a miracle, you know, when I look back, but you're right, everything did, and it's the people you meet. Not only did I have great support from my mom and dad, but another adult, and the best dance teachers. I mean, my tap teacher was Gene Kelly's tap teacher.
Oh, my goodness.
So my jazz teacher was the choreographer, as I mentioned, from the Kenley Players.
Right.
And so going to the Kenley Players is where I met Tommy Toon.
Oh, my goodness.
And Tommy Toon became my mentor for the next 23 years. So,
right.
I mean, it's just...
Right.
Kids ask me, how do you get into the business? And the truth is, you just pursue your path, and for every artist, there is a different path. So there's not just one way of doing it. That's the beauty of it.
Right. And also the complication of it is that
you
can't say to anybody how it's done.
No, you really can't.
No. And you can't say how it will happen for you if it's going to happen. And
no,
that's
exactly
difficult
right.
for people, I think.
No, it's also why I feel such a responsibility when I discover new talent or young talent. I try to do what I can to pay back. Because Tommy was so good to me, and in this business, you learn from your mentors. I mean, this is a business that you have to see it and study it to learn it. You can't just watch movies and watch TV. You have to be part of the process.
Right.
And that's what I was. You know, Tommy at the time was sort of the king of Broadway.
Yes.
It was the 80s, and he was really on top. And I got, you know, firsthand to watch him create original musicals.
But you see...
And you can't learn that in college or out of books.
No, but what he saw in you... This is, you're saying what you saw in him, but what I'm thinking is what he saw in you, and what he saw in you
another
was...
tall, skinny, white tap dancer. He's like, oh.
No, he saw the DNA.
Yeah, I
you
think
know,
that's
he
probably
saw,
true.
That's what I think it is.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
You know, he saw, I have to do this, I will do this,
yeah.
You know, and that's, it's irresistible. That's what I think. So, okay, so where did you find Tommy?
At the Kenley Players. He was doing the leading player in Pippin.
Uh-huh.
And I was in the ensemble, and because I was the tallest one, Equity says, our union says, that every part has to have an understudy. So they made me Tommy's understudy. Now, I was 16 years old. There was no way I was going on as a leading player, you know.
Right.
But I had to do understudy rehearsals, and I was the closest one to fitting into his costumes. So I got that job.
Yet
and
again.
Because I was understudy, I think there was a special bond between us, and just the proximity of having to learn his part and always watching him because I was the understudy, that we became, you know, fast friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was the most exotic creature I had ever, you know, being a kid from Pittsburgh, I had never met anybody that looked or acted like Tommy.
Right.
You know, he was very...
Well, now, you're not, I mean...
He's, no, Tommy was very exotic.
But not just
I'm
to
not
a kid
really
from Pittsburgh.
Exotic, yeah.
I was
a football player, you know, quarterback, Midwestern, you know, tap dancer. Tommy was very exotic. I remember at the pool, he had silver toenails. And for a six, that was a lot. That was a little freaky for me. It's like, do you know that your toenails are going to hit? Of course you did. It's quite an education at 16, let me tell you. Yeah. But the best thing that ever happened to me, and next to my parents, he's the most influential adult in my life.
Yeah. But again, I mean,
meant
come on. You know, how many people, you know, ran into Tommy Toon and became his under... I mean, it's just,
right. No.
You know, I mean, it's really, it's beautiful.
Okay. No.
All right, so you're 16 and Tommy becomes your mentor.
Mm-hmm.
So
you know. I wouldn't, the Kenwood Players always did, you could be in four shows a summer. I could never do the fourth show because I had to get back to football practice. But then once I hurt myself in football, I had my knee bent backwards.
Yeesh.
Then I became drum major. But I still had to miss the fourth show because then I had to go back for band practice. So I only did three shows a summer, but for 3 years. And then it was after my first... Then I went to Northwestern, where I was in all their shows as
That's
a freshman.
Studying.
Liberal arts. They wouldn't let you declare as a freshman, so it was just a basic liberal arts courses. But I choreographed a show there too, which was fun, which they said a freshman had never done before. But since I was already a professional for 3 years, they let me do it. And then I remember I was going to come back the next year as a, what would be your second year in college, as a sophomore. And I was going to direct Seesaw with Jane Atkinson. But I never went back because that's when Tommy called me and my parents and asked if I would travel in a show called The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, starring Alexis Smith. And after much debate and conversation, they acquiesced and they allowed me to leave college to tour with the Whorehouse.
Wow.
And I, as long as I promised that when the tour ended, I would go back to college. At the time, I think I really
meant it.
I didn't mean it at the time,
sure,
but there was no
it.
Once I got a taste of that, and it seemed silly to go back to school to learn to do what
you were already doing.
Me to
right.
Do.
Right.
So that was really it, and then it just went from there, and I was in the chorus of many shows, and then, you know, I was in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers on Broadway, and they let me actually have a few lines.
Uh-huh.
And then, once again, it was Tommy Toon who did a show with Twiggy called My One and Only.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to take 2 weeks off to go put together the national tour of another Broadway show he directed called Nine.
Mm-hmm.
And so he asked me to replace him for those 2 weeks on Broadway. Now, the show had won Best New Musical, the Tony Award. He had won the Tony for Best Actor in a Musical. He had won the Tony for Best Director of a Musical, and he had won the Tony for the Best Choreographer of that show. And I was going to replace him. It was frightening. It was absolutely frightening. And but that was thrilling, and at the end of those 2 weeks, I married Twiggy 16 times. I got to dance with Honey Coles. I don't know if you know
Honey
Coles.
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do.
That was probably the highlight of my performing career, was doing that Act 2 tap number with Honey Coles 16 times.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew at the end of those 2 weeks, chances were, even though it went well, the odds were I was not going to take the final bow in a Broadway show for quite some time, if ever again. And so I closed the door on performing, went out on a high, and went, okay, it's time now for me to pursue my choreographing career.
Wow.
And that's what I did. I moved to L.A., and I took any dinner theater job, any benefit job. Unfortunately, AIDS had just come in. I remember the first time they even printed the word AIDS in the New York Times. And there was a benefit in California at the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, and it was called Hollywood Salute to Broadway. And they asked me to direct this benefit. And Bob Hope was our host. The surgeon C. Everett Koop, if you remember him,
I do.
He was there. And we had the reunited the original cast of Chorus Line, every one of them in the original costumes. We got the original Dream Girls. Now, you mind you, these shows had just, you know, it wasn't like 40 years ago.
No.
They were still hot. And Michael Bennett had just passed away from AIDS. Mm-hmm. So it was very profound to have the Chorus Line people there. And Tommy Toon came out and did a number, and Sandy Duncan, and it was just a star-studded event. And that really launched me directing, and I feel badly that it was on the back of AIDS, but it was the first AIDS benefit west of the Mississippi, and it was a big hit. And then I got a phone call from a gentleman named Alan Carr. Mm-hmm. Don't know if you remember Alan Carr. Very big, great raconteur, but he was an impresario of sorts. He discovered Village People and Bruce Jenner, and Alan Carr is a remarkable man. Anyway, he called me because he was doing a benefit at the Hollywood Bowl called Broadway at the Bowl, and he asked me if I would direct it. And still, I'm in my 20s, so this is a very exciting thing, and that was Placido Domingo was our host, and I had Mary Martin and Placido and Act One singing Some Enchanted Evening. You know, it was B. Arthur and Yvette DiCarlo, I mean, Yvonne DiCarlo, and Patti LuPone, Carol Channing. It was a Tommy Toon again. It was just, I was so blessed. And that went well too, so all of a sudden I just started getting calls to do these benefits. So I really learned a lot about directing, doing benefits, and recreating my one and only in dinner theaters and regional theaters up and down the coast of California, because they would hire me because I knew the original blocking and choreography.
Right.
So that's what they were hiring.
Right.
But because, you know, the cast is different and each theater is slightly different, you kind of direct, although you're stealing. I basically stole Tommy's work, but then started to give it my own little flair, and that was sort of the beginnings of it. And it just, and Tommy watched. He flew out. Tommy, this is how supportive he was. He flew to California, and not only were he in these benefits for me, but he watched every show that I choreographed and directed. And after, I don't know, 3 or 4 years of that, he said, I think you're finally ready. I'm doing a show called The Will Rogers Follies. And Cy Coleman is writing the music, and Betty Comden and Adolph Green are doing the lyrics, and Peter Stone is writing the book, and would you come be my associate choreographer? And I said, sure, I have nothing better to do. And my job on that show, because Tommy, you know, new musical, Tommy was really busy working with the creatives, the writers.
Mm-hmm.
And so my job was to create dances that looked like Tommy Toon choreographed them.
Right.
And he reminded me that usually when he choreographs a show, he wins the Tony for it. And there was my assignment.
So, create dances that I'll be proud of and I can win the Tony for?
Yeah. You want to know what? That's exactly what happened.
Oh my God!
That's exactly what happened. And because that happened, thank God it happened,
yes.
Because that launched, you know, my career in the
kidding.
Big time.
No,
because had I not delivered there, I don't know what would have happened.
But he must have known you were.
So that was
this is an amazing story.
Yeah. I haven't thought about those stories or talked about them out loud for a long time, if ever, actually. It's interesting to think about your past, isn't it?
Yes.
Or to be old enough to have a past.
Well,
when did that happen? When did I become old enough to have a past? Holy cow.
Okay, but it's a perspective, right?
Yeah.
Is what it is. Okay, so when was this and what happened after that?
Well, that was 1991, mm-hmm. and it won the Tony in 1992. And then the Weislers, famous Broadway producers, were going to revive a little-known show called Grease, and starring Rosie O'Donnell. It was going to be her Broadway debut, and they asked Tommy to direct it. Well, it wasn't really Tommy's taste, let's just say that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he goes, you know, Grease, I don't... Yes, directing a revival of Grease is not really right for me. However, I have groomed this kid who is ready. His name is Jeff Calhoun, and I think he should direct the show. And so that was sort of my directing debut, directing Grease. And Tommy was sort of the insurance policy.
Right.
So if it wasn't working or if there was trouble,
everybody felt they
could bring in Tommy and he would come
right.
in. But and he was very instrumental in helping us design the show. But then he went away and he came back, I think it was dress rehearsal, and saw the show and gave some notes, very good notes, and so that launched my real directing career on Broadway. Yeah.
Good grief.
Yeah.
It's
a long time ago.
It's an extraordinary, I mean, it's like, it's one leap to another leap to another leap? Do you know
what
I mean?
Yeah, or one hurdle and then another hurdle. Because each time you start a show, I feel like you're climbing Mount Everest. Because you're starting from zero. You don't know, you know, you're like, oh my God, it's insurmountable. And then one step at a time, and then you're on top of it looking down, going, wow.
Wow.
And then you think it gets easier.
Doesn't.
It doesn't.
Does it get harder?
Each time, no. But each time it's as difficult. Because each time you're starting, even though you have more experience, I'm sure athletes would say the same thing. Does it get easier, even though you're a pro, to play on Sundays? I think it's just as hard every time. You know what to expect, but you still sweat as much. You still have to use as much muscle. You still... You
actually,
know,
I think that
it's the same.
I was actually thinking there that it might be harder in the sense that you have this, you have something to continue proving. I mean, do you know what I mean?
Well,
I mean,
it's harder if you're like a Tommy Toon and you're on top.
Right.
It's hard to stay there.
Yes.
Because what are
the
chances that everything
there,
you do
right.
is a masterpiece?
No, that's right. And the pressure.
So that's a different league. I've never been in that league, so I don't know. You know, I don't
you mean
have
not
to,
yet?
I don't have to, you know, stay on top. That's one advantage of not being on top. I don't have to stay there. I can stay right in the middle. But, no, it's not easier, and it's not hard. Each one of them is really different. And there's fear. Each time you go through the same process. You know, you're afraid, oh, my God, can I do this? Is it going to be any good? Because your worst nightmare is that an audience just sits there and just hates it.
Yeah.
And you know, you work just as hard on flops as you do hits.
Of course.
You know, so...
So have you had any
flops? But it doesn't
flops?
Get easier. Oh, I've had... You can't be... You can't call yourself a professional if you haven't had flops. I've been lucky. I've seen it at the top. You know, I've had shows that have won Tony Awards. And then I've had shows that have opened on a Thursday and closed on a Sunday.
Really?
Yeah, that's
that
the nature.
Must be devastating.
It is devastating because you've spent years on that show.
Right.
There's a show very dear to my heart called Brooklyn that I loved so much that I not only directed it and choreographed it, but I produced it.
Oof.
And I'll never do that again either.
Right.
You know, because it ran 9 months. We had a tour, but the critics were not kind. And therefore, you know, the entire capitalization was lost. And I just couldn't take that family and friends lost that kind of money.
Right.
Because I really believed I was doing everyone a favor.
Right.
I was sure this was the next rent.
Right.
I was positive. Shows you what I know. You know?
Wow.
God, so it was devastating, yeah. At the time, it was a $6.5 million musical. And it lost every dime. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So, no, you have flops, absolutely. I've also been called in to shows that were in trouble that ultimately became flops as a show doctor. So there's also that way to have a flop.
Oy,
it's not your flop.
Right.
That's boy. I know that Yiddish word.
Yeah, right.
No.
Yeah, right.
I've had a lot of oldies. You know, I don't like to talk about those because those were other people's expense and their dreams that I tried to help make better, but it was their dream.
Well, you know, I think that there's just no way to know when a thing is going to be...
You don't know. And you get too close. You know, when you fall in love with something, it's like, it must be like children.
Yes.
You know, you're so close to them, you don't really see it for what it is. Because you love them unconditionally, and that's how I am with my shows. And it's not for me to judge it. I have to just love it and do the best I can, and hopefully the audience
will see
like
it.
Your
like
child
it.
The way you
right.
do.
Right.
You know, it doesn't always work that way, but that's all you can hope for.
Right. Okay, so is there anything else that you want to tell me about this? Anything else that stands out as part of your journey?
No, I always feel self-conscious talking about it because it just seems so boring to me.
Oh, God, it's not boring.
It really does. It
trust
just
me.
Feels like... Okay.
Trust me. This is not boring.
Okay.
It's so interesting. So talk to me about Bonnie and Clyde and how that happened.
Oh, Bonnie and Clyde. Talk about another one that's close to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping... You know what I don't have? I don't have that original show that's a hit. You know?
Your own.
Yeah, I think as a director, my dream, I don't know if everyone, but for me, I want to know that I created a show that long after I'm gone, high schools are doing it and hopefully inspiring some new kid to want to be in the business because of that show. You know? And I'm hoping that Bonnie and Clyde may be that.
Mm.
The last time I thought it was Brooklyn was going to be that. It wasn't. Although schools do that occasionally. It's not the same kind of thing. So I'm hoping Bonnie and Clyde will be that show that outlives all of its creators.
So how did it happen?
Frank Wildhorn, the composer, we were put together, a friend of ours, Paul Tatro, who runs the Ford's Theater in Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. He said, you know what, I think you and Frank would work well together. And Jeff, you need a composer to work with. And Frank, quite frankly, he didn't feel Frank had the right director in his life. So we met and instantly sort of became like brothers.
Right.
Yeah. I love Frank like a brother. And however, he kept giving me demos of his shows. And as much as I liked Frank and as much as I was a fan of Frank, none of the scores that he gave me spoke to me. Until, I would say this was probably a year later, it may have been his sixth show he gave me, and this one was different. There were three songs, and I heard these songs and I called Frank immediately, because I couldn't. He gave it to me at night, we had dinner, I played them all night long, I almost didn't sleep, I just kept listening to him going, am I crazy? Are these as good as I think they are? And then the next morning, I was rehearsing this show. I forget what show I was rehearsing, but I played it for all the creatives. I said, what do you think? Do you guys like this song? They go, yeah. I go, now listen to this. And I played them the second song, and they liked it. And I said, now listen to this. And everyone agreed it was an amazing three songs. So I called Frank, and I said, Frank, I love this. And I didn't mean it to come out this way, but I said, these are so good, it doesn't even sound like you wrote them. And I didn't mean that, of course, but it just was different than the other material he mm-hmm. had given me. And so I said, can I do this show? And he goes, absolutely. And so that was really it. And I had a friend named Ivan Menchow, mm-hmm. who had never written a Broadway musical, but I had read many of his scripts, and I knew how talented he was and how funny he was. And I called Ivan and said, you wanted to write a show? And he said, absolutely. Yeah. I flew out. I mean, you know the story. Yeah. I flew out to L.A., and I played him these three songs, and he also fell in love with them. And then... Don and Frank, who were already a team on the show, they had already written many songs, welcomed Ivan and I into the fold as creatives.
Wow.
So yeah, and then I did a show at the Mark Taper Forum called Pippin mm-hmm. with Def West. And closing night of Pippin, this is how fortuitous, this is just how the business works. I flew back out for the closing. Well, I don't fly out to all the closings, I just felt an affinity for this show, and working with the deaf has become a passion for me, and that's what Pippin was. Half the cast was deaf. So the whole show was signed and voiced. But anyway, I flew back for the closing, and there at the closing backstage was Chris Ashley, who is the artistic director of the La Jolla Playhouse. Uh-huh. And he also gave me sort of a backhanded compliment. He said, after seeing the show, he goes, well, Jeff, I didn't know you were that smart. And I said, thank you, I think. He goes, listen, I'm running the La Jolla Playhouse now. Is there anything, you know, if you ever have anything, let me know. And I said, well, I can't believe this. I just happen to have something. And the next day, I sent him the script. And a week later, he called me and said, let's do this at La Jolla. And that was how it began. And that's where we did that a year before Sarasota. And it was based on the success of La Jolla that Michael Edwards came, saw the show. We were looking for the next developmental stage for the show. And it turned out to be the Oslo Theater. That's the trick, is to know when is it ready. But that's why it takes me usually three times to feel like, okay, this is the best it can be right now. But that's what's beautiful and painful about this business, is you can create a show, and like Grease ran 4 years on Broadway, and every time I went back to watch it, I was in a different place in my life. So I always wanted to keep changing it, but you can't. It's what it is, and you send it out into
and
the
it's
world,
working.
And you go,
right.
And it's working.
Right. It ain't broken.
But it's so hard for me, because, you know, your work only reflects where you are in life at that moment.
Yes.
And so as you change, of course, to go back and see something you did years ago is difficult, for me anyway.
It's fascinating. Yeah. It's just so interesting to me. Okay, so aside from the Disney Newsies?
Yes, it's funny that you don't know this movie, because... Now that you talk to people in their 30s,
right.
And they can't believe it hasn't been already on stage. It was a movie in the early 90s that Kenny Ortega directed, and it was Christian Bale's movie debut. Mm. And it's called Newsies. And Alan Menken wrote the score, and Jack Feldman is the lyricist. Jack Feldman wrote a song you probably heard of. He wrote the lyrics to something called Copacabana. She was a showgirl. Okay, that's Jack.
Right.
Anyway, he's the lyricist, and Harvey Fierstein was brought in to adapt the screenplay for the stage. And so Disney asked me to do this show.
Oh, I do know this movie.
You probably do.
I do. Santa
Fe, that's the big song from it.
Wow. Okay, so, and when is this happening?
It's happening right at the end of the summer, right before, in theory, I go from opening Newsies to rehearsing Bonnie and Clyde the next day.
Oh, what a shame.
Isn't that terrible?
Oh, God.
And then, and here's the killer. Right after Bonnie and Clyde opens on Broadway, I just have to go to London. They're forcing me to go to London because they're going to... I did a show, a national tour of Dolly Parton's 9 to 5, and they want to create it for Europe and send it all over the UK and Australia. And so I'm going to have to spend Christmas and New Year's in London.
I'm so sorry.
I know. If not Sarasota, why not London?
London, exactly.
My second favorite place after Sarasota.
Me too, actually. Yeah. So then, and then next May or thereabouts, back in Sarasota.
And then next May, I get to come back to the Oslo.
Oh, God.
With state-of-the-art song and dance, starring Noah Racey. Now, Noah Racey is, your audiences won't know him, but he is a one of the greatest song and dance men in New York. He's just very difficult to cast. It's just hard nowadays to find shows that need
what
a
he does,
great
right.
40-year-old song and dance man.
Right.
And so we thought, why not just create a show for him?
Oh, how lovely.
And so it'll be a nice reunion for Tommy and I to work together again. And it'll be a nice thing for your audiences to be exposed to some of the greatest dancing that I've ever seen.
Wow.
And it's just going to be, I hate to use the word old-fashioned in selling something, but this is just great old-fashioned song and dance.
Yeah.
And that's...
traditional.
What... as I told you, that's what got me interested in this business to begin with,
right.
Watching those people, the greats.
Right.
And so that's what we want to do. We want to honor the greats through Noah. And it'll be fun to be back at the Oslo then. And that's in, I think it opens in May or June.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after that, I'm going to direct the Broadway revival of another Frank Wildhorn show called Jekyll and Hyde.
Back on Broadway.
Wow. So, yeah.
Amazing. Good grief. Yes, I think Frank said that he thought, actually, that he might have 3 shows on Broadway, which even for him is a...
yeah, he was hoping
right.
It was going to be
Wonderland,
Bonnie and Clyde, and Jekyll
and
Hyde.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes, Frank, yes, seems to think more is better.
Right.
And we're trying to say, Frank, it's not always about quantity. But I love Frank, so what are you going to do?
All right, so, again, I always ask, is there anything you want to say about what it's like to have dedicated an entire life to this work?
Oh, well, all I can think of is what a privilege it is. I just feel like it is such a gift that I can make my living as an artist. Because I know how many people are not doing what they love and what they're passionate about, and I am. So I really am living the dream. Not that sometimes it doesn't feel like a nightmare. But I am literally living the dream, and I just feel blessed and privileged. And there's a pressure, I think, too, that comes with... there's a responsibility that comes with success and good fortune, and that is to pass it on. And that's to behave a certain way. You know, you don't have a right to not be polite or not to be nice or not to try to contribute when you leave your house to the world being a better place. I see people that have everything and the energy they put out into the world is so negative. It just surprises me. How can you act like that when you have everything? I started about 5 years ago a scholarship at my high school.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so fun because the first year I did, it's for people that want to make their living in the arts.
Mm-hmm.
And the first year we had, you know, I think 2 people applied, and so I kind of split it and gave it to both of them. And then the next year it was 3 people, and then it was 5 people, and now I hear this year we're up to like 9 or 10 people that will apply.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes me feel good that the word is spreading, and I mean, it's, you know, it's what I can do. It's not going to change their life, but it's just some encouragement.
It might.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping it's just encouragement from a professional that went to their high school that says, you know what, this is possible.
Right.
You can make a living in the arts. But also I'm lucky, I feel lucky because as a performer you're limited to the years that you can still kick high and do splits.
Yeah.
As a director, I'm only limited by my imagination. So God willing, as long as I don't lose that, you can work as long, you know, until you drop dead. I want to do nothing more than, when I die, I want to be in a rehearsal room or an opening night, like Gower Champion. How dramatic was that?
Did he die on opening
night? Opening night of 42nd Street.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's a classic. It's just, it's fabled. I mean, that's, yeah, one of the most famous Broadway stories.
Right, out with his boots on, huh?
Yeah, he, a lot of people attribute the success of 42nd Street to that happening. And they made the announcement at the curtain call.
Oh, my God.
Of opening night. Isn't that something?
Yes.
If you didn't know about it, you would
think
he orchestrated
it. Right, right.
Because he was a great showman. Yeah. But no, he really did pass away opening night.
Wow.
But I can think of nothing better. I mean, you have to go. So I guess I would either in the kitchen, in the garden, or in the theater. Those are my three passions.
Wow. You're a cook.
Yeah.
Ooh.
They're like, I think it's the same thing. Gardening, cooking, and directing
They're
shows.
They're all creating.
It's all the same thing, yeah. When you cook, you go to the grocery store and you cast it.
Right.
You cast your dinner. Right? And then you come home and
a
you get
of
to
this,
create
a little
it.
That.
And then, you know, and if you want a revival, you go into the refrigerator and it's leftovers. So it's very, I think it's a lot like putting on shows.
You're terrific. This is a great place to stop. Thank you so much,
Jeff. Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you,
Lynn. Thank you, Jeff.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed my interview with Jeff nearly as much as I did, and you can tell how much I enjoyed it. Jeff is, as I said, just what you see is what you get. He's spontaneous, he's open, he's, as I said, self-deprecating. You know, he doesn't think this is an interesting story. And this, combined with this remarkable talent and remarkable success, really. So right at the moment, Jekyll and Hyde is on Broadway, and Newsies is on Broadway, and although Bonnie and Clyde did not last, I want to say that I think that was a dreadful mistake by the critics who heard it. It was a wonderful, wonderful show. And we can look forward to Pulse on Broadway and hopefully not the very distant future. And so not only Frank Wildhorn, but Jeff Calhoun can have three shows running on Broadway at the same time. As I said, if you listened to Noah's interview and if you listened to Sharon Leslie's review of Pulse, and if you listened to what Jeff said about Noah, and now you're going to hear me saying, on top of all of that, that Pulse is life-affirming. In Noah's interview, he says when people come over to tell him how wonderful he is, he knows that they're actually saying that they are feeling how wonderful they are. And that is really what happens when you see something like Pulse. You feel your aliveness, you feel your talent, you feel your energy, you feel your desire to be who you really are. So, Pulse, of course, is kind of a poster child for The Lynn Show. Since, as I said in the beginning and say in all my shows, The Lynn Show is about recognizing that there may be a quality of yours, an ability of yours, a talent of yours, a way of thinking, anything that did not go down well somehow in your childhood, that you had to hide undercover. And to take this really seriously, because it's my experience that when we come into adulthood, it is precisely those things which we had to hide undercover, which are what we need to live the life we were meant to live happy, joyous, and free, as they say in the 12-step programs, to be our very self. And if you can't express your emotions, if you can't demonstrate your talents, if you aren't able to stand up for yourself, if you aren't able ever to be quiet and listen while someone else is talking because you were told not to talk, you were told to be quiet, not to be quiet. What's the matter with you? Can't you talk? And so you get these people who can't stop talking, who lost the ability to be silent. And of course we have many more people on the other end of that continuum who were criticized for anything and everything they said, and so they don't talk. I have too many clients who really lost their voice, and some of them actually lost it, really. The ability to make a loud sound, that's too hard. So again, the Lynn Show is dedicated to making the point. There may be aspects, qualities, talents, ways of being that you have had to deny. And that is not irrevocable. These qualities can be recovered. You can be your whole self. But there is usually some challenge, obstacle attached to recovering. There's a chapter in my book called The Price and the Payoff. Because the payoff for recovering hidden aspects of ourselves quite often comes with a price, which is why so many people won't do it. But if you are curious about that, if you think that there's more to you than you have been able to demonstrate, more to you than you have been able to access, more to you than you have been able to enjoy, there is probably. And it's not impossible to recover that. And a place to start would be by getting my book, of course, or simply calling me up, going on the website, thelinshow.com, and clicking on email me and ask me some questions. I'll answer you. Well, I'm probably running out of time here, so I need to thank, as I always do, Josh Hackney, who is my technological guru. That is, he built the computer I'm using, he found the software on which I am speaking to you, he taught me how to use it, and when I forget, he comes back and reminds me. He fixes my smartphone. He helps me with all of the recording. There's actually, more and more, there's nothing I do that doesn't require some kind of technology, and I'm not good at it. I'm very, very dyslexic, and even when I can do these things, I quite often forget how, and then I can't recover it. So there's always Josh at the end of the phone or on his way over. So if you have issues with any of this and you need help, you too want Josh Hackney, and you can get him like you can get me on my website, thelinshow.com. Remember not to leave the E out of Lynn. And, I wanted to say that up on my website are some very adorable pictures of a young Jeff Calhoun. You'll see them if you go up on the website. And so now, as always, I hope you got something you can use from this show. Something that interested you. Something that you didn't know that you learned for the first time. Something you knew that you had forgotten. Something that tickled you, inspired you. Anyway, something that'll bring you back, because I will be back next week, same time, same station. And as always, I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retiring. I won't slip out of sight, no. I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night.